Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 22nd of October. This hour of the program, we're going to be talking about health care in the presidential race, questions about the health of the presidential and vice presidential candidates. We'll be looking at the 45 million people in this country who are uninsured and ask how the McCain campaign and the Obama campaign address those people who don't have health insurance. The future of Medicare and Medicaid, what have the candidates laid out for their plans for those programs? Are they in trouble? Do they need fixing in some way? Joining us this hour, and she's been with us several times, is Professor Helen Halpin. She is at the School of Public Health at the University of California, Berkeley, where she's a professor of health policy. And her research interests include increasing access to health insurance, consumer experiences in managed care, smoking cessation programs, and the integration of health promotion and disease prevention services in the U.S. healthcare system. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Professor Halpin. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655 for you to join our conversation, or feel free to send an email, and that address is talk@wpr.org. Professor Helen Halpin, thanks again so much for being with us.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
You think about the stress of this job. These people are campaigning. They've been campaigning for years. They're on airplanes all the time. They're at rallies. It's no wonder they're not sick all the time. But let's just start with a question about the health of the presidential and vice presidential candidates. Have they been forthcoming? Would you like to see more medical records? Who's healthy? Who may not be? Why aren't they giving us pages and pages and pages of medical records?
Well, I'm not a physician, and I haven't had access to any of the medical records, so my comments are totally based on what I've read in the press. Senator Obama and Governor Palin are relatively young adults, so my guess is we don't have any concerns about their current health status and how that might influence them. The question's always, of course, for candidates who are older. And probably the biggest concern has been expressed about Senator McCain's records. And I would say he's been less than forthcoming. He provided access to over 1,000 pages of medical records to reporters for just a few hours, and they weren't allowed to make copies or take anything with them. And so I think there's a sense of frustration, frankly, that those records have not been more accessible given his age of 72 and his prior history of melanoma. I think it's not necessarily a cause for concern, but certainly I think voters would feel more reassured if the McCain campaign was more forthcoming with those records. As far as Senator Biden, I believe he has released all of his records, and I just remember reading about this the other day. He had some sort of heart surgery back in the late 80s, but that was 20 years ago, and he hasn't had any recurrence, and my overall sense is that his health is quite good.
Mm-hmm. And what about Obama? He evidently hasn't released very much at all. There has been mentioned the fact that he has been a smoker, and I'm interested that
That's
you
true.
Do smoking cessation benefits.
Yes.
And I have read that he has quit, or he's tried to quit, or he,
well,
I don't know what
the
story is.
Quitting smoking is one of the hardest things that people do. Many people are successful, but many others struggle, and we don't really understand the real nature of addiction and why it's so much more difficult for some. I know he's trying. Whether he's completely quit, I have no idea. I thought it was cute. I remember when this first came up, he said, Michelle's the one who keeps him on the straight and narrow on this one,
right,
and that if anyone ever sees him smoking, they are to call Michelle. So I thought that was very funny. I mean, I think he clearly has tried to quit. Most smokers have to try four or five times before they're successful, and there are also actually a lot of effective treatments now. I mean, the challenge, my guess is that, you know, I think when you're in such an extraordinarily successful situation, that's probably a difficult time to quit smoking.
Mm-hmm.
But I know clearly he does not want to smoke anymore, and that's really the most important factor, your desire to quit.
Right. And in terms of Palin, I understand that she just has not released anything. Why wouldn't you, if you're young, as you say, and healthy, and there aren't many concerns, why not be forthcoming? Don't the voters deserve that?
Well, I think they do. I think it should be required, honestly, and I have no idea why
mm-hmm.
they're not being released.
Okay. Let's look at those people in this country who are uninsured. I think it's sinful. There are 45 million people who are uninsured.
Actually, the latest numbers look even higher than
that. Do they really?
Yeah.
Ooh. Can you tell me if you feel that either of the candidates has a plan that will ensure a vast number of those uninsured?
Well, I don't think there's any question that Senator Obama's plan would. Estimates are at a minimum 34 million of those people, and a lot of the economists who've made estimates suggest that it would be a lot higher than that. They're looking at between 95% to 98% of those who are uninsured. And the reason that's true is that the goal of Obama's plan, one of the major goals, is universal coverage to make sure every American has access to affordable, high-quality, comprehensive health care. And that's the goal of his plan, whereas that is not the goal of the Republicans' plan. They, frankly, don't believe those numbers at all. They believe that there are millions of people who are eligible for programs who aren't signed up. They argue that that number includes people who aren't here with adequate documentation, and therefore they shouldn't count. They argue that single adults are perfectly capable of buying their own insurance, and so they don't count. And actually, once you subtract all the people they say don't count, they estimate that there's only about 9 million uninsured. This is a very different perspective from the Democrats. And so they don't see this as a crisis. They don't see it as a big problem. The problem from the Republican perspective is not so much the uninsured, but the escalating costs of health care. And they would argue that before we do anything about increasing coverage, we need to get escalating health care costs under control because they're consuming an increasingly higher share of the gross domestic product. And if we don't do something to get them in check, they'll literally eat up our entire budget late in the 21st century. So their proposal is more about how to reduce government spending on health care, how to give some relief to individuals, but certainly not enough relief to make a big difference. The estimates are that when all is said and done under the McCain plan, maybe 2 million people would have more insurance, and the sad truth is that many more people will have these high deductible health plans that will be relatively inexpensive in terms of their premiums, but potentially exorbitantly expensive in terms of the amount of money people have to pay out of pocket before their insurance kicks in and when they use care.
Considering what's happening with the economy, which is atrocious, this $700 billion rescue or bailout plan, two wars going on in the world, a probable recession, the whole world being in trouble economically, can either one of these candidates do anything about what everybody would agree is an all-important issue fairly soon in his administration?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question. I think it depends on what the candidate's priorities are. If you look at the last 8 years, and many of the ideas that McCain has included in his plan are those that have been supported by the Bush administration. The Bush administration has never really pursued these ideas very vigorously, and certainly wouldn't have been able to since the Democrats have had a majority in Congress. Given what the Congress will look like following the election, we don't know how many gains the Democrats might get, but I think all of the analysts and pundits are suggesting that they will make significant gains in both the House of Representatives and in the Senate. It would be very difficult for a McCain administration to enact any of the reforms that John McCain has proposed. In fact, I've been in several health care debates with McCain surrogates over the last few days, and even they are saying that McCain's plan represents sort of the far radical right of conservative ideas in health care reform. So clearly that's not going to be compatible with a Democratic Congress. I'm encouraged by the rhetoric I hear coming from the Obama campaign. I think Senator Obama mentioned the last 2 weeks, he seems to mention health care every time he speaks, which suggests to me that it is a top priority. And in fact, I think health care now is polling again very high in terms of major concerns that Americans have. It had sort of fallen off the radar again. But healthcare and the economy are so closely linked. And when the economy turns down, as we've all seen just in the last year, 750,000 people have lost their jobs. Most people get their insurance from their job. And when you've lost your job and you're or your income has, you know, decreased, or your pension has been devalued because of the decline in the stock market, and you're not yet eligible for Medicare, you don't really have any access to health insurance, particularly if you have a pre-existing condition, because you're out in the individual market and they can turn down anybody for any reason. So, and they have no interest in insuring people who are ill because they can't profit from them. So I think that, in fact, the situation with health care gets worse during down economic times, and that is the time when the need is most urgent. The way Senator Obama proposes to pay for his health plan is through the money that will be freed up when he returns the income tax rate for the highest earner in the country, those who make over $250,000 a year, back to their pre-2000 levels. So in at the end of the Clinton administration, taxes for people who made over $250,000 a year were 39%. Under the Bush tax cuts, those got rolled back to 35, and under Obama's plan, they would go back up to 39. And there's a lot of money there, and some of it would be used to help pay for Obama's plan.
Professor Halpin, what is it about this country that has kept us from doing something about this problem, which has been around for years and years and years? It's a bipartisan issue. It affects everybody. I just don't get that.
Well, actually, unfortunately, it's really not a bipartisan issue, because on the liberal side recognizes that the health care and health insurance markets don't function well for everyone, and that particularly since our system has largely transitioned from a nonprofit to a for-profit system, the system will systematically exclude those who need care, mm-hmm. which is really upside down.
Right.
And so the market itself fails in healthcare. It will not insure people who don't have money, and it will not insure people who are sick. So when that happens in a market, there's a role for government to step in. And in fact, when we passed Medicare and Medicaid in 65, those were government interventions to cover the two groups who really had been left out of the employer market, and that was employees who had retired and no longer had a link to employment, and people who were on cash assistance welfare who weren't employed. So Medicaid and Medicare were to plug the holes in the employer system. We've seen a continual erosion in that employer system. And one of the most central questions, I think, facing us is, what is the appropriate role for employers going forward? Do they have a social responsibility to provide coverage? Or, like in many other countries, should the social responsibilities be taken up by government? Mm-hmm. And in this country, we've always had this traditional clash between the liberals who think government can do good and is needed in certain situations, and the more conservative view, which says, no, we don't want government involved, let the market work, the free market will produce the best outcome. So that's an ideological difference that it's very difficult to bridge. The second issue is political. And despite political will on the part of our representatives in the Congress and in the executive branch on various occasions, the interest groups who provide insurance and provide medical care are very, very powerful. And even as far back as the 40s, when this country tried to enact national health insurance, at that time, the American Medical Association was vehemently opposed to any government involvement in health care and was very successful and had been successful for decades in defeating any proposal that would give the government a greater role. In the last 20 or so years, we've seen that power shift, and the AMA doesn't have that kind of power anymore, but the groups that have stepped in and can basically veto almost any bill because of the way campaigns were financed are the insurance companies and the pharmaceutical companies. And all you have to do is look at the Medicare drug benefit to see that their influence, the influence of the HMOs and the pharmaceutical companies, was enormous such that they benefited from that bill, I think, in many ways more than the elderly have. So we've got this problem of interest and their money in politics and the influence they have. And I am hopeful, at least, that since the Obama campaign chose not to take any federal PAC money or federal lobbyist money, that perhaps that influence won't be as strong when we try yet again to get universal coverage.
We'll talk more about the future of Medicare and Medicaid in just a moment, and welcome your phone calls. Our lines will get busy on this topic, I'm sure, so feel free to call in right now. 800-486-8655 is our number. Our guest is Professor Helen Halpin. She's at the School of Public Health, University of California, Berkeley, where she's a professor of health policy, and we're looking at a number of issues. What do you think about the health of the candidates for president and vice president? Do you think that, as the New York Times suggests today, the Congress should require the nominees to disclose all of their relevant health records? Are you concerned about the future of Medicare and Medicaid? Do you still think that health care is a top priority for you as you vote? And does either candidate have a plan that you would support? Also, other news today about, and our guest mentioned, prescription drugs, that the nation's consumers are trying to get by on fewer prescription drugs because of the expense of these drugs and because we're in financial hard times. To your calls in just a moment. One line open. Take it if you'd like. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program, the New America Foundation and the Center on Law and Security at NYU's School of Law sponsored a major conference on the war on terror after the Bush administration. We'll be talking with two of the participants in that really good conference. Steve Clemens, director of the New America Foundation's American Strategy Program, will be joining us. Steve Cole, president and CEO of the same foundation, who's also a staff writer for the New Yorker magazine, will be with us as well. And just one more note, I need to tell you this because it's a week from tomorrow. That's hard to believe. Your vote, a major conference for us at Marquette University. We're broadcasting live from Marquette a week from tomorrow, both hours of our program. Marquette University Alumni Memorial Union. We're just days before this presidential election. So all of you political enthusiasts, please join us for our live broadcast. We will have a number of people with us, people from the McCain campaign, from the Obama campaign. We'll have some political reporters with us, political scientists, and, of course, talk with students who all indications are very involved in this election. So we'll talk with Marquette students as well. Admission is free. Registration, we just need to know if you're coming to figure out how much chocolate. We're having chocolate cake. How much chocolate cake we need to order, and coffee, so we can all talk after the show. 414-227-2047 is the number to register. 414-227-2047 for you to be a part of that audience. All right, let's go to phone calls now. And start with Lisa from Fontana. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just want to really disagree with the idea that the presidential candidate should have to publicize their medical records. And it's not because I think it's a bad idea theoretically, but can you imagine this campaign with that kind of access to medical records and the misinformation and the misinterpretation that would be flying around? It would just be another thing to bury the real issues. I think it would be a disaster for campaigning. And possibly there's a way that they could have some, you know, independent physicians do physicals on all of them and maybe keep it confidential, but to give them a clearance that there's nothing that's going to interfere with their ability to carry out their role. But the idea that they would become public, just I can see how the innuendo being used and the misunderstanding on the part of a lot of people that are uneducated in medical issues, it could be a disaster.
Thanks for your call, Lisa. What do you think, Professor Halpin?
Well, I mean, I think there's clearly a trade-off. I mean, you do have a right to privacy for your medical records. The other thing is, though, I think the American people have a right to know whether they're electing someone who's in good health and of sound mind. And I think traditionally candidates have voluntarily released their records as a way to reassure the public that they are in good health. And I think when someone refuses to release their medical record, it raises eyebrows and causes one to question, what are they hiding? And I think the innuendo about what you're hiding could potentially be just as harmful, if not more harmful, than what's actually in the medical record. Clearly, you wouldn't put them necessarily on the internet, because I think there is a right to privacy, but somehow to release them to a group of reporters or experts who could then make some sort of pronouncement about the health of the candidate, perhaps that's a compromise. But I think it is important for the American people to know the health status of candidates before electing a president.
Thanks, Lisa, for your call. Here's an email from Janet from Baraboo. I have no health insurance and don't know when or if I will be able to afford it. McCain's $5,000 is a joke that would never help me, but will Obama really be able to do anything about it? Or are the insurance and prescription lobbyists so strong, I believe they may well be the problem?
Yeah. It all depends on what happens in the election. If the Democrats end up getting control of 60 seats in the Senate, or even something close to that, 58, I think the prospects are fairly good of being able to do something relatively quickly. The Congress, particularly Senator Kennedy, and I know Senator Baucus and many others, have been working on legislation for months now with the hopes of being able to introduce a bill shortly after the inauguration. If it's a bill that Obama supports and it's a bill that the Democrats support, I'm afraid that the lobbyists won't have a whole lot of influence, because what would happen, especially with 60, is you make the Senate filibuster-proof, which would mean that the Democrats could actually govern and get through some of these proposals that that are high on their agenda, including health care. Now, under Obama's plan, the person who wrote the email would absolutely be covered. In fact, she would be one of the many who would be eligible to go into this new pool that will be created, and she will have amazing choices, better choices probably than many of us who have employer coverage. Obama proposes to offer a menu of private health plans very similar to what members of Congress get, so you can choose one of those. Or he's setting up a new public plan, which would allow people to go to any doctor or hospital without insurance company interference, very much like a single-payer plan that would operate alongside those commercial plans and compete with them, and she could have the option of going into that. And under Obama's plan, there's no tax credits, there's no involvement of the IRS, but your premium is totally directly subsidized based on your household income. So the lower your income, the higher your subsidy, and the idea is that everyone can afford to get coverage in that pool. And if your income's below a certain level, you probably wouldn't have to pay any premium. So the whole idea is to make this very easy for people to sign up. Your premium is just totally a function of what you can afford each month, and you have fantastic choices. So from my perspective, the Obama proposal actually gives people more options, clearly will make things more affordable, and hopefully will reduce the number of uninsured significantly.
And McCain's, the emailer made reference to McCain's $5,000. That's
right.
The tax credit for insurance?
Yeah, okay. So in McCain's plan, the centerpiece of that plan is this tax credit. So if you have coverage through your employer or through in the individual insurance market, for an individual, you'd get a $2,500 tax credit, and for a family, you'd get a $5,000 tax credit. This isn't money that goes to you. This is money that goes to your employer to help offset your employee contribution, or this is money that goes to an insurance company to help offset your premium. And the question is a good one, because the average cost of a health insurance policy for a single individual is $6,000 a year, and you get a $2,500 tax credit. So that's not even half of the amount. And in the For a family coverage, the average cost is over $12,000 a year, and you get only a $5,000 tax credit, leaving you holding the bag for $7,000 in premiums and most likely thousands of dollars in deductibles and cost sharing. So the affordability for the individual under McCain's plan, it definitely will make things more affordable for people who keep their employer coverage, but it really doesn't do much to help people buy in the individual market. And the way McCain pays for his plan is to tax your employee health benefits. And for the first time ever, since World War II, those have been pre-tax dollars that you use to pay for your insurance, not after-tax dollars. And McCain would flip that. Many people see this as quite a radical proposal. And the economists who've looked and evaluated the plan estimate that about 20 million people would lose their employer coverage as a result of this. And those people would have to buy in the individual market. And probably the most disturbing thing, at least from my perspective, when I think about people who are going to have to go out and buy in the individual market, McCain not only does not regulate this market to prevent them from doing the kind of cherry-picking and medical underwriting and exclusion of pre-existing conditions, he proposes to deregulate that market. He proposes that states be able to set, insurance companies be able to set up in states that have the least regulation and sell across state lines so that they can get around all of the current regulation on the health insurance industry. Many people don't realize it's the states that have the authority to regulate health insurance, not the feds. And so most of the regulation of health insurance is determined at the state level. And if you allow insurance companies to go across state lines, all of those provisions, like requiring, that health plans cover mammograms, all of that would go out the window. And McCain, interestingly, wrote an article this month in an actuarial magazine in which he called for the complete deregulation of the health insurance industry, just like we did with banking. Now, the timing of that article and those ideas, given what's happened as a result of deregulation in banking, is quite unfortunate, because I don't think anyone wants to see the healthcare system go through the kind of complete meltdown we're watching in the banking system. But again, this is a fundamental difference. These are very conservative ideas of deregulation, let the market work, whereas Obama's plan is much more concerned with let's make sure healthcare is a right and that people have that security every day without having to worry about how they'll pay for their care when they're sick.
Terry from Superior is next. Hi, Terry.
Yeah, I wanted to know if the professor has read Ezekiel Emanuel's book called
Health. I'm having a very
Yeah, I can't hear you very well either, Terry. Can you get a little closer to the phone?
Yes, I want to know if the professor has read Ezekiel Emanuel's Healthcare Guaranteed.
I have not.
It's a proposal to basically fund healthcare through a value-added tax, and it speaks to the funding side. And
I will take a look at it. I'm not familiar with it. The value-added tax would go on to?
Would go on to purchases of just about everything, and I think it's.
I see.
Everybody recognizes that.
Yeah.
It's a third rail sort of issue right now.
Okay, and who's the author? We'll try and do it.
Ezekiel Emanuel. He's actually Rahm Emanuel's brother.
Oh.
Can you believe that?
Huh. Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thanks so much. That'd be an interesting show at some point. Thanks for the call. I want to move this into Medicare, Medicaid for just a moment. Are they healthy? Are they not healthy? Are people happy with them? Do they need tweaking in some way?
They definitely need tweaking. Medicare remains an extremely popular program. And two major problems from my perspective are, they have a relatively antiquated benefit package. And under that legislation, they gave the Congress the authority to decide what benefits would be covered, which has made it extremely difficult over time to update this package. I mean, the Medicare program still, the legislation that authorizes it still prohibits Medicare for paying for any preventive care, and it's only been as an exception to that provision that we've been able to add preventive care. We recently added a drug benefit, but it has a big donut hole in the middle where you're not covered, and the federal government's prohibited from negotiating with the drug companies over prices, so prices, sky's the limit on the prices. So, I mean, we definitely, I think, need to go plug some of the holes and restore the drug benefit to full benefit. And we also, we're overpaying the HMOs for caring for Medicare beneficiaries. We're overpaying them to the rate of about 12%.
Ooh.
Yeah. So there's a lot of money in them there, Hills. And one of the things that Senator Obama has proposed to do is to reduce those payments so that the industry isn't so heavily profiting off the care of the elderly. So I think there are lots of forms, from an Obama administration perspective, they would want to improve Medicare. Medicare, as everyone knows, though, costs are going up just as fast as they are in the rest of the healthcare system. And with the growing Medicare enrollment and increasing healthcare costs, there are concerns about the sustainability of that system. Now, the McCain proposal is to actually make enormous cuts to Medicare. In fact, McCain's proposal proposes that over the next 10 years he would cut $880 billion out of the Medicare program, which is, you know, almost the equivalent to twice the bailout. So we're looking at huge cuts to Medicare under McCain's plan, and he hasn't specified at all where those cuts would come from. In terms of Medicaid actually provides one of the most comprehensive benefit packages of any health insurance in the U.S. The big problem with Medicaid is that we pay the doctors who take care of Medicaid people so poorly that fewer and fewer doctors are willing to treat Medicaid patients, and this is just not right. So we need to restore reasonable and fair payments to physicians and hospitals to care for Medicaid patients. I also may want to make a comment about Medicare payments. One of the problems with our system, and one of the reasons it is so expensive, is that about two-thirds of our docs here in the U.S. are specialists, with only one-third primary care, whereas if you look at the rest of the world, we have the flip of that. We have two-thirds primary care and only one-third doc. When you specialty docs, when you've got so many specialists who are always using new, expensive technology, the costs of your care are going to be higher, and it's technology that's largely driving these cost increases. So one of the things, and I know it's politically very difficult, we're going to have to do, is restore some balance in Medicare payments and pay primary care doctors under Medicare a fairer rate and not pay the specialists quite so generous a payment. Again, these decisions are being made by the Congress, and one would hope under a reformed system we would remove decisions like how much we pay physicians and what benefits are covered from the political arena.
Mm-hmm. It seems to me, having been through this with my dad last year, that the end-of-life issues in Medicare need to be worked out in some way, too. Hospice care and...
Absolutely. I mean, we see huge growth in use of hospice care, but, I mean, we have a culture in this country. Doctors are trained to think of death as failure. And when, I think, philosophically, when we think about the society, we say, yes, that's true, but when it's our own loved one, I think we tend to want to do everything possible. I think we all need to become much more educated about death and the natural course of death and accepting death as a part of life. We're talking about a huge cultural swing here. But I actually, my mother just died a few weeks ago.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, I mean, you know, this happens to everyone. This is a fact of life. And her condition was such that the damage to her was irreparable, and we made the decision to put it into hospice. Mm. We knew that was the decision that she wanted. She had made that very clear. She had that in writing. But it was still a very hard decision to make. But I do think we need to respect the quality of the end of one's life as well as the rest of our lives. And about 25% of what we spend on healthcare in this country is spent in the last year of life.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So I do think there are tremendous gains to be made by reexamining how we approach the end of life. But these are very difficult conversations to have.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they sure are. I'm sorry about your mom. It's so
Thank
hard to
you.
Lose your mom, yeah. Let's pause for just a moment, and we'll return. Our guest this hour is Professor Helen Halpin. She's a professor of health policy and director of the Center for Health and Public Policy Studies at the University of California, Berkeley School of Public Health. And we're welcoming phone calls for her. We're talking about health care in the presidential campaign. She obviously supports Senator Obama's plan. We will hear from the McCain campaign on this as well in the days before the election, because this issue, from our covering these issues for a couple of years now before the election, is very important to you and to Americans, all Americans. So those who can't hear our show, and there are some of those, right? We'll take more phone calls in a moment. We also have an email address if you find it easier to get through on email, and that's talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Returning to your phone calls now, and let us go to Malika. Oh, no, Ashley Andrea is next from Menominee. Hi, Andrea.
Hi, good morning. I wanted to say, first of all, thank you so much for the wisdom in this show. The professor's beautiful ability to address so many aspects of this topic. And Kathleen, your comment that this really is so sinful to have so many people in this nation uninsured. And I'm one of them. I'm 38, self-employed. I actually got catastrophic insurance briefly for about a year. My dad was nearly killed by a drunk driver, and it kind of put the fear into me of what would happen to my family if something like that happened to me. And then I got rid of the insurance because it went up by more than 30% in that first year. And I heard a beautiful show that was done on one of the public radios. I listen to both M and WPR. But by a gentleman, the guest was a gentleman who had researched the health programs across the world and really had done a comprehensive study. And I apologize, I can't access the name or remember it right now. But it was so poignant to me to see that so many other people, other nations, have done this, have done what we're now, what Senator Obama is proposing to do, that it is doable, and it can work very well. And not only does it not bankrupt us, but it creates a level of security that, to me, I just, when I picture everyone in our nation knowing that they can get care for themselves, for their loved ones, to me, that really supersedes, in a sense, the economic crisis. That to me is even more pivotal in a sense because, you know, for myself anyway, I know I can go out and, you know, heck, if I had to sell my house and live in a cardboard box, you know, I'd figure that out and we'd figure out a way to take care of our loved ones. But when it comes to that basic care of being able to create wellness and take care if a crisis happens, it is just so essential to our well-being. And I do think it's just astonishing that we haven't created that yet. So thank you for the way that you said that. This is basically just a big kudos to you guys. And I'm really, really excited to see what happens after November. I'm excited about Senator Obama's plan.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Andrea. Bye. Thanks very much for your call. June is next from Shawano. Hi, June.
Hi, Kathleen. My question for your guest is one about the use and economic use of procedures, as my physician calls it. Since I am classified as elderly, although I still feel 16 years old in my brain, we are subject to, if you haven't good insurance, a lot of procedures. And I left an HMO to join my doctor at her private practice. And since she doesn't do procedures and has to send them on, she finds, and I agree, that people in the age category are subject to so many of them, and they are so expensive, particular MIRs, CAT scans, and other things. I'm not talking about well care like mammograms and such. How do you feel about this?
So is the question that about your physician having to get approval before she can order certain procedures?
No.
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 Okay.
She
Sorry, I don't understand
them,
the question.
She doesn't.
She doesn't want to do them.
Shall we say?
She doesn't want to do them.
They're overdone, perhaps. Should we go that direction?
Oh, I see.
We're doing too
saying.
Many of them.
you know what? I honestly don't know. Without knowing your physician and what the situation is, my guess is perhaps, you know, some health plans now look at physicians and how much they're spending and how many procedures they use, and they pay them as a function of that, and they reward them if they use fewer procedures. My guess is maybe it might be something like that. Maybe it's also very difficult under that health plan to get approval for procedures. It could be any number of things. I think you said you're in an HMO. Is that correct?
I'm sorry?
Are you in an HMO?
I was in an HMO.
You were in an HMO. Yeah, I mean, I think one of the complaints that consumers have had about HMOs is that it's very difficult for them to get the things that they feel that they need or that they want because the HMOs are trying to control the cost of the care that they're providing. What's interesting about the Medicare program is that most of the elderly who are eligible for Medicare have not chosen to go into HMOs, despite the government's efforts over 20 or more years to get them to move into private health plans. 80% of Medicare beneficiaries still participate in the traditional Medicare program where you can go to any doctor or hospital. So I wish I could more directly answer your question, but those are my thoughts about why the reasons, and I'm wondering if you're still having this same problem now that you're out from under the HMO.
May I respond?
Sure.
Sure.
I'm sorry. I don't think you got my point. I was an economist, and I studied healthcare when I worked for the government. And back then, HMOs were going to be our savior. Unfortunately, now, if you have good insurance, when you go in to see your doctor and you're in a particular elderly group, you are subject to many more procedures than people, say, who don't have health insurance and may very well need the procedures, and you do not.
I'm saying this technology is overused.
Mm-hmm. Overused, thank you.
Yes, mm-hmm. Okay. Yes, and you're right. If you don't have insurance, you're not going to have access to those things. And there probably is some a contribution, particularly in defensive medicine, for physicians worried about potentially being sued and making sure they've covered all their bases. Although I think that estimates suggest that that represents a relatively small proportion of total costs. But I think you're absolutely right. I think we need to look at both what's being underutilized as well as what's being overutilized and try to find some balance there.
Thank you, June, so much for your call. George from Milwaukee is next. Hi, George.
Yes, good morning. I was quite surprised when I heard your guest say that the $5,000 that the McCain campaign has been touting would be going to each individual family under his plan really doesn't go to the individuals, but that it would go to into their employer health care plan or to the insurance.
That's exactly what I said, sir. I said it wouldn't go to the individual. It would go to their employee health benefit to subsidize their share of the premium, or it would go to the insurance company to subsidize that premium.
Right. I guess my concern about it is that I think that it's kind of been misrepresented on the stump.
Yes.
People probably think that they're going to be getting a check for $5,000.
Yes, they do. In fact, I blog on health care issues on the national blog Daily Coast a lot, and I can't tell you how many people, when I explain this, say, wait a minute, I thought I was going to get $5,000.
Right.
And people have said things like, I'm not going to use that $5,000 for my health insurance. I'm going to use that to pay my rent, and I'm going to use that. And I write, you know, I have to inform them, no, you can't do that. You're not going to get a check. This is not your money to spend. This is money that goes to subsidize the cost of your insurance, either through your employer or through your insurance company. It's the employer and the insurance company that get the check on your behalf.
Thanks so much, George, for the call. Another email, Mike from Madison. I'm interested in how Senator Obama's plan deals with the problem of people only signing up for insurance once they get sick. Because he would ban pre-existing conditions, it seems to me that people will avoid paying premiums until they're sick, and those people already paying into the system will end up paying for the difference. I wonder how he addresses this issue.
Well, there are two problems here. One is the problem of moral hazard, where people sign up for insurance only when they need it. The other is the free rider problem, where young people choose not to buy insurance because they don't think they need it, and with the assumption that if they have an emergency, they can get care in the emergency room. He does a couple things. One is for the free rider problem. The group who's least likely to sign up for insurance to behave the way this man, individual has suggested, are between 18 and 29 years of age. And what Senator Obama does, I think, is actually quite creative. And he his proposal includes a provision that anyone between the ages of 18 and 25 can stay on their parents' health care plan. In other words, their parents can continue to buy family coverage, and they would be eligible for that family coverage. That certainly doesn't take care of all of the problem, but addresses a huge part of the problem. And in fact, some states have gone even further. New Jersey, for example, now allows adult children up to age 30 to stay on their parents' plan. If you're in school, if you're just starting out in a job, frequently you'll have a job that doesn't have coverage, and it would really be at almost no cost to the child and the family, the same cost for the family to keep that adult child on the policy. So that's number one. The other is that if you look at the population in general, there's probably only, I would guess, at most 5% who would play roulette and say, I'm not signing up until I get sick or I get hit by a truck. The vast majority of the American people would like to have health insurance and would have it if it was affordable and they felt like they were getting value for their dollars. So I think these are concerns. We don't see this kind of behavior, for example, in an employer setting. We don't see people who are offered employer coverage at very reasonable rates. Employers subsidize, on average, 80% of the premium. We don't see them deciding, oh, I'm not paying my 20% until I get sick. Theoretically, this is a concern, but it's actually not how most people behave. So I would say that those are certainly things we need to be cognizant of, and we need to make sure that we build in provisions to try to prevent people from doing that. One way of doing that is saying that you can only sign up annually once a year, so that you can't in the middle of the year make a decision,
right,
that, oh, suddenly you need coverage. There are ways to get around these problems, and I think it's important to be aware of them and to try to prevent them.
John from Eagle River is next. Hi, John.
Yeah, a friend of mine, a mechanic, has a small business, and he says that he's going to vote for McCain because he gets this $5,000 tax credit where he can buy insurance for his one employee, but he says if he doesn't buy the insurance under Obama, he gets fined.
No, that's absolutely not true. That was true of Hillary Clinton's proposal. She had an individual mandate, whereas if you didn't pay, there would be, if you didn't buy in, there is some sort of individual penalty. But an important thing to understand about Senator Obama is he's a constitutional scholar, and he believes in individual liberty and autonomy for adults in this country, and he will not force anyone to do anything. The only mandate that Senator Obama has in his plan is for children. And, you know, children are not in a position to make a decision about whether they buy or want coverage or not. So all children will have to be covered under Senator Obama's plan, but there is no mandate and no fines for adults under Senator Obama's plan.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Thanks, John. Thanks for the call. And let's go to Mike from Milwaukee. Hi, Mike.
Hi. You know, I don't know if it's true or not, but I heard in China they had, like, a reverse program that you pay the doctors for being healthy instead of being sick. But I was wondering, you know, it might really pay to subsidize programs in YMCAs and gyms and, you know, universities and for the public to remain healthy rather than spending on people who get sick. I don't know if that's part of anybody's program.
Actually, it's interesting because of all the candidates, Republican and Democrat, who were running for president this year, Obama's plan probably gives the most intention and the highest importance to health promotion, disease prevention, and public health. And I think that campaign understands very clearly the importance of keeping people healthy as well as treating people who are sick. And in fact, the latter is just as important, probably if not more important. And there are many experiments going on all over the country trying to figure out how we can reward physicians for keeping people healthy and reward individuals for staying healthy in addition to subsidizing access to care. So I think your point is excellent. I would urge you to go to the Obama.com website and read the provisions on prevention and public health in that plan.
Thank you, ma'am.
You're welcome.
Thanks very much for the call. And Colleen from Nina. Hi, Colleen.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I was listening to your talk, and I thought this is ironic that we have a candidate for the president who has one of the deadliest forms. Can you hear me?
Yes.
One of the deadliest forms of melanoma, a skin cancer that easily metastasizes to other organs. And I happened to read, I was in Arizona in early June and read his medical history that was advertised in the paper and all of the things that he does to follow up yearly and every 6 months or whatever. But clearly, somebody without insurance would be dead by now because they don't follow up. And I'm a healthcare worker. I'm a nurse. And people can't, if they can't afford that. So they wait, and then something bad happens, and then they die. So,
well, and I mean, the irony, your point is so well taken, because the irony is that if McCain had to function under his own plan, he couldn't get insurance.
Really?
Well, yeah, he wants to further deregulate the market. Hmm. He wants the insurance companies to be allowed to deny anyone coverage for any reason. No insurance company is going to want to insure someone with a history of melanoma. He would not be able to find coverage. This is the great irony. And, in fact, in an interview, this was pointed out to him. And they said, you know, why are you so against government-financed health care? You've had it your whole life. His dad was an admiral. He was in the Navy, and he's been in the Congress for his whole career. The man has never lived a day without government-financed health care, and yet he's radically opposed to it. He wants to put everyone in the individual market, and he would not be able to get coverage in the individual market. So there's a disconnect there that I really don't understand, honestly. But his proposal represents an ideology more than it does something that that he's thought about in terms of how would I fare under my own policy. Mm-hmm.
Helen Halpin, thanks so much for being with us.
As always, thank you. It's a pleasure.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Professor Helen Halpin is a professor of health policy and director of the Center for Health and Public Policy Studies at the University of California, Berkeley School of Public Health, obviously supporting Senator Barack Obama for the presidency and thoroughly knowledgeable about the health care plans. And we will have somebody from the McCain campaign talking about his health care plans sometime before the election, which is pretty soon. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, and thanks to Rhonda as well for doing on-air production. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.